I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. The first item on the agenda, there was, we approved the minutes of the March 21st meeting, so there was a typo, a bill number was incorrect. The corrected minutes are in your packets. It references House File 2550. That was the bill that had the number that had been incorrect, so it's corrected now. So I will make a motion to reconsider the minutes of the 21st meeting of the Government Operations Committee with that correction. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, I guess all in favor, please, of the motion to reconsider, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the corrected minutes are before us. I will move to approve the minutes of the March 21st meeting as corrected. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are corrected. I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the March 26th meeting.
So moved, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Representative Bonner moves approval of the March 26th minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Those minutes are approved. First bill on the agenda is House File 823. I will move that House File 823 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. I understand you have an amendment also, Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, we did the last week when we had this in our committee, we put the amendment on.
Oh, okay.
So the bill was amended, and that should be the 823 UEI or UE1 amendment, but that's the one we put on.
Okay.
And basically what that did is it slimmed the bill down, and it made it basically change it to the way the bill is now. It's asking that before when a company is filing for a permit to do work in the city, in this case the bill was brought forward by T-Mobile, and the amendment was a agreement between the two parties, the city's group and T-Mobile, and they came to agreement on this. And as I said in the past committee, and I said in the government or the local government committee, this may not be total peace in the valley, but it's a truce in the valley. And they've come to agreement that they're going forward to be doing this, that when outside consultant fees for work that they're going to be doing are required. And the cities oftentimes hire these outside consultants because most cities don't have the staff to do this engineering work on their own, that before the permit is complete, that and so that the company can have an idea of what the cost is and make a determination whether they want to proceed or not, that estimate has to be gotten to them before the permit is complete. And they said that's what the bill does. And Mr. Coyle is here for questions. If I can't answer them, so, and that's the bill.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone who would like to testify on House File 823? Okay, seeing none, any member discussion? Representative Kwong?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, there's a, I guess it's cited, provided by Peter Coyle and it shows sort of reference of a wireless permit fees and the variance across the different entities. If my recollection is correct, back before the Super Bowl, there was a hard battled agreement that finally came up that gave sort of a uniform limit to the 5G site fee per pole. What's the relationality between that, the bill, and the material that was presented?
Welcome. Please identify yourself for the tape and then respond to the question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kwong, my name is Peter Coyle. I represent T-Mobile here this morning. Thank you very much for the chance to be back with you. Representative Kwong, the so-called 5G bill that was approved 2 years ago dealt with what I referred to as small cell installations. The materials you have relate to what we call macro sites, and in this case, they deal with water tank installations at various cities around the state.
Okay. Representative Kwong?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. I understand we do need, in fact, to adopt the subcommittee report.
Okay.
It's in your packets, with the caption H-23UE1. Would you like to move the
I'll move the subcommittee report.
Okay. Representative Nelson moves the subcommittee report. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. So the bill is in the proper form. Is there any additional member discussion? Any closing remarks, Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, I renew the motion that this be sent to the General Register.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Nelson renews his motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Howard, would you like to go next since you're not on the committee? So I will move that House File, 2501 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. I understand it needs, that's where it needs to go. And then is there a, do we need to adopt the subcommittee report? Okay, yeah, it wasn't amended in the subcommittee, so it's in the shape we would like. Welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is House File 2501, a bill that maybe some of you have heard before. It's been suffered the fate of two or three vetoes, I think, at this point in various tax bills and omnibus bills since 2016. And it's a bill that comes to me from the Richfield Historical Society, but I understand historical societies across the state. And it's a really a clarifying language issue. Current law in Minnesota state statutes permits cities and towns to provide funding for history work in their area. However, if you read the statute literally, it says that cities and township governments are not allowed to support historical efforts in their own city or township, but that they can only support county historical societies. And so this change would permit cities and townships to support history work in their own cities and townships. And as I mentioned, I've heard about this in Richfield. I know there's historical societies such as White Bear Lake, Rogers, many others, where they've went to their local units of government and they've been advised that under current law they're not able to provide that level of support. So this bill would simply add the words city and town to allow local governments to support the local historical societies in their area. The bill is supported by the Minnesota Historical Society, the Minnesota Association of Townships, and the League of Minnesota Cities. And I stand for any questions.
Thank you. Is there anyone who would like to testify on House File 2501? Okay, seeing none, any member discussion? Okay, seeing none, I guess we've gone easy on you in both the subcommittee and the committee. Representative Howard, any closing remarks?
To Representative Zerwas, I hope not. Thank you for the support. I really appreciate it.
Okay. I will renew my motion that House File 2501 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Howard. Okay, Representative Bonner. Looks like your bill is going to Ways and Means. Would you like to move it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that House File 2069 be referred to Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to thank you all, of course, for the opportunity to introduce to you House File 2069 on the creation of a task force for community competency. In the last several years, there's been a marked increase in the number of individuals identified as incompetent to stand trial. Unfortunately, Minnesota is not alone in this, as other states are experiencing similar concerns. What we do know is that there are several key factors that have compounded this problem. These include legislation such as the 48-hour rule that removes these individuals from custody in county jails and sends them to state-run operated treatment centers. In December, a bulletin issued by the Department of Human Services began discharging patients no longer in need of that level of care that were released to help free up beds that were in high demand. To add to these complexities, an inadequate process for individuals deemed to be eligible to leave these treatment facilities but continue to be in fragile health found themselves released with no adequate step-down services and without community-based resources. Many find their way back to the county corrections facilities where they once again are deemed unfit to stand trial, and they are placed in a situation where their health can easily deteriorate further. We know that there are marked differences across counties in the number of individuals that are determined to be incompetent to stand trial, which range from counties with few individuals deemed unfit to counties with far more disproportionate numbers meeting this criteria. We suspect that some of the differences in this may be explained by things like yellow line programs that provide early intervention before booking or incarceration. These programs tend to steer individuals to proper treatment rather than entering the system. But the simple truth is we don't know. So based on the sharp rise in the numbers of individuals deemed incompetent to stand trial, the concern over discharges from state-operated state treatment facilities, and an overall concern for public health, a group of stakeholders was convened by NAMI Minnesota and Mental Health Minnesota to begin researching this issue. The good news is that through those efforts, we have determined that Minnesota is eligible for up to $800,000 in technical assistance from the Nonprofit Council on State Government at no taxpayer expense. So members, before the bill before you today does a couple of simple things. It creates a task force comprised of key stakeholders to come together and study the root cause of the issue and generate proposed solutions. A report will be generated early next year to deliver the findings on immediate and long-range recommendations. It also allows us to access the $800,000 in funds from the Nonprofit Council on State Government, whose mission is to aid government in evaluation, analysis, and creative solutioning for some of our most challenging problems. And with that, members, I do have beside me Sue Aberholden, who is the Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, to answer any specific questions on the bill.
Okay. Sounds like you aren't testifying. You're just here for questions.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add a few things.
Sure. Please identify yourself then for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
So Sue Aberholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. This is really becoming a huge problem in Minnesota. Even if you look at what the state courts ask for funding, an additional $1 million to handle all the new psychological exams for this issue. And what's really puzzling is why it's happening. We have more trained police officers than ever before. We actually have more community-based services than ever before. And this is actually happening in states that have a more robust mental health system like ours. In Colorado, there isn't anyone from a community hospital who can go into their state institutions. It is all people from the jails. And so we need to get to the bottom of this and really in some ways look upstream. So what happened a month ago or 60 days ago to these individuals that landed them in jail so that we can figure out how to divert them. We don't think this is a good use, frankly, of our limited resources, especially, Anoka Regional Treatment Center, and we have people backed up in our community hospitals, and we just can't just throw out, frankly, a solution without really digging into the issue. I know this looks like a long list of people to be included in a task force, but this is actually what the National Council requires to be able to apply and obtain their technical assistance. It's most of the people we would have brought to the table, frankly, anyway, and most of the people that we brought together in January. So just if you're wondering, like, where did that list come from, it's part of their requirements. And that technical assistance will be very helpful. They just finished some work in Oregon. We're able to look at what they did. And, frankly, we need that kind of help to move down the road here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Aberholden. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on House File 2069? Okay. Seeing none, member discussion. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, seeing there appears to be over two dozen members, and I understand the, looking at the list, that there's a great deal of stakeholders that should be involved. During the testimony of the bill, there was discussion that there's quite a bit of variability across different counties of the state of Minnesota. Nothing in this precludes all the members being from one or two counties, was there any thought of having a limit of no more than three or four from any individual county, so we can have a not just diversity across different areas of expertise, but actually diversity across the state of Minnesota, so that I don't want to have a solution come through because everybody's from just a couple of counties and it's aimed there and it overlooks aspects that might be very important to many other counties.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Representative Kwan. That looks like that question, that's a good one. And it looks like Ms. Everholden may actually have a good answer for us, so I'll let her speak as the expert.
Ms. Everholden.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, when we've pulled together people like this in the past, those individuals, and we made sure there's at least one metro and one from greater Minnesota, they actually go back to their organizations. We just finished a two-year review of the Commitment Act, and we had different people from counties, and then they went back to their counties to say, what do you think? And so I can assure you that we want to make sure that we get input from all the different counties, because we have several that are actually part of what's called the Stepping Up Initiative to try to do diversion in their communities, and we want to learn from them and really discuss with them. I think this is, you're right, this is gets to be a pretty big group, but we will make sure that we are talking with all the different counties, and that's why we wanted to make sure that AMC and MAXA really are the folks who say, here's who needs to be in this, so that they continue to communicate back.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kwan?
I guess I would feel more comfortable. I have no problem with the intent. I don't have a problem with the composition, other than it'd be nice. The only place I see where there's supposed to be any is on 2.1, of where you have one from the seven county, and from everyone else appears could be from basically the same county. So if there was language that could be added that no more than 35% can be from either, that there must be a minimum of 35% from each, metro and outstate. So you could have, that just guarantees that you have a minimum of a little bit more than a third come from an area that isn't part of the other area.
Thank you, Representative Palm.
Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I truly appreciate actually the thought there. I think that the percentage might be a little bit difficult to achieve, but I certainly appreciate the intent, and I would be more than willing to work on a compromise to actually get that language in the bill before it, as it continues, it stops. I would be very open to that, absolutely.
All right. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author. I'm just curious, if you are deemed incompetent to stand trial, are you then under guardianship? And in other words, does it only affect what happens to you in your sentencing and that treatment?
Ms. Abderholden.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, so what happens is the defense attorney comes forward and says, I don't think that my client can participate in their own defense. Then they go through the psychological evaluation. They're deemed incompetent. And then there's another step, whether they decide whether the person meets the commitment criteria. If they meet the commitment criteria, then they go off to, for example, Anoka or St. Peter. So it's a two-step process. They are not under guardianship. They do not lose their rights. They could sign contracts during that period and everything. It is not guardianship. It strictly is relating to their ability to participate in their defense in their trial.
Thank you.
Okay, yep. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just curious, Representative Bonner, page 2.24, actually number 24, is a crime victim appointed by the Commissioner of Corrections. How do you get the name for that?
Ms. Abderholden?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, so we kind of looked into this as well, and that was one of the requirements that they had. Because they oversee the Crime Victims Council, they can go there and ask for someone who might participate. We also, frankly, could submit names to the commissioner because we have family members who've been injured, by a loved one. They would be considered a victim, and they could be on that as well. So seems a little odd, but I think they also want to make sure that for people who have been injured, that they have a voice at the table about what happens.
Representative, okay. Representative Zerwas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author of the bill, thank you for working on this, and Ms. Abderhold, and obviously for your work. This is a huge, huge issue, and not the least of which is as this issue is growing and increasing, in recent months we've had the department start to push the responsibility of competency restoration, or at least start the ball at pushing competency restoration away from the Department of Human Services and onto individual counties that have no framework, no infrastructure, no experts in all 87 counties to begin to even have that type of undertaking. And so it's very concerning if that trend were to continue for all 87 counties to gear up to participate in a really specialized and intensive field around competency restoration. I would gather to guess there isn't the expert pool statewide to be able to build that depth in all 87 counties. So this new direction that the department appears to be traveling on is really concerning. And so one of my questions, I don't see it specifically list in the duties of the things that this task force will be looking into, but I'm wondering if that's something that this task force will dig into and perhaps make recommendations back so we can try to stop this early on.
Ms. Abderholden?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think some of it's on 2.29. When we talked about identifying current services and resources available, we're going to find out, of course, that there's next to none. And so that's something that the committee will have to address when they
develop. We don't need a task force to know that.
I know. That'll be very quickly handled. But then when we look at number five, you know, the recommendations, you know, prevention and diversion, which would be a part of it, the timely process, how to provide and fund competency restoration services in the community as a part of that, which, again, I think is really important, and we want to look as broadly as possible.
Okay, Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We don't this isn't a topic we talk about a lot in this committee, and so I've found a group of folks that maybe don't hear me say it a lot, but we wouldn't treat any other population of Minnesotans this way in our criminal justice system. If we had an individual suffering from heart disease, from cancer, from any other medical condition, would we treat individuals in our criminal justice system the way we treat individuals with mental health issues and mental illness? We would not isolate them and segregate them in our jails, in our prisons. We would not shuffle them from state hospitals to treatment centers, back out of the community with no follow-up services, back to jails. We just wouldn't do it for any other population in the entire state. And we've done it with this group of Minnesotans for the history of the state. And it's about time that we built the community infrastructure and the resources to take care of people and actually treat mental illness as the physical disease it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Is there any additional member discussion? Any closing remarks, Representative Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to actually thank Representative Zerwas for very clearly underscoring some of the key points here and, of course, for more or less creating more eloquently than I could the closing remarks as well. So thank you for that, Representative Zerwas. And with that, members, I urge that you support the measure.
Thank you. Representative Bonner renews her motion that House File 2069 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Bonner.
Thank you.
Representative Elkins. We have House File 2741. would you, I understand it's going to Ways and Means, would you like to, and would you like to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the that we refer House File 2741 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. And I understand you have an amendment. Members, it's being handed out now. It was posted to the committee website in time, but for some reason it didn't end up in our packets. So it's being handed out right now. So maybe we'll wait to move the amendment until it's been handed out,
sure,
just so the members have.
Provides a little bit of background on this one anyway.
Sure, sure.
So this bill is a clone of House File 1893, which was heard in transportation earlier this week. And we cloned it just because it was easier to clone it and move it directly to this committee than to go through the machinations of moving it from transportation to Ways and Means to the floor to here. This is a bill is generally referred to as the auto dealers bill. It in general it contains provisions that help the dealers and other stakeholders adapt to some of the issues that have been generated by the Minlars. And today we're here to hear the bill in this committee because this being Minnesota, it of course establishes a new steering committee. So I have with me Amber Bacchus from the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association, and I think I'll let Amber explain. Well, here we go. Explain the amendment and the committee.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Bacchus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. And this is an initiative we've been working on the past 2 years. Some of you who were around last year, this might look familiar to you because this legislation was overwhelmingly passed in 2018, but unfortunately it met the veto of Mark Dayton due to other politics surrounding Minlars. So we're back with the bill this year, which is intended to help streamline business processes that have been difficult since Minlars was launched, as well as formalize stakeholder engagement, which the legislative auditor recently pointed out was so important to helping as we're trying to fix the system to make it work for both the agency and the users. So Section 11, which is before you and which is being amended today, formalizes what is happening right now between driver and vehicle service and the various stakeholders, not only the auto dealers, but the deputy registrars, the towing companies, the BCA, and others. When we passed this bill last year, we were focused exclusively on titling issues, but over the last few months, the stakeholders and agency have determined to have one steering committee looking more broadly at both the driver's license issues, since the FAST ID system is now up and running, as well as the Minlars motor vehicle and titling issues, and that also hopefully will save the deputy registrars from having to come to St. Paul to do multiple meetings all the time. So, again, this amendment sets up the committee infrastructure and asks us to work collaboratively on issues that will impact both the development of FAST ID and drive the motor vehicle and titling Minlar system going forward.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2741? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to member discussion. Before we do this, I would like to welcome Representative Becker Finn to the committee. The addition of a new member who got sworn in yesterday led to some reshuffling of committee members. So Representative Becker Finn is the newest member of the Government Operations Committee. Representative Pawlowski is no longer on the committee. So wanted to mention that. So welcome to the committee, Representative Becker Finn.
Yes, I'm
so Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, I do think this is a very important bill, and I wanted to make sure that you got to the amendment now that we've had a chance to read it, so that we make sure that gets engrossed.
Yes. Yes, I thought maybe your question was to the amendment. If you like, I could move the amendment. Right.
Go ahead, and then we'll talk about it later.
Sure, sounds good. Or Representative Elkins, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we'll like to move the A1 amendment, considered an author's amendment.
Okay, sounds good. Any additional discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. This is pretty important stuff. So we've been fighting this for the better part of 2 horrible years of suffering through Minlars, and I've been on the front line of that, and this will finally give voice to a lot of the folks who have been, and all partisanship aside, they've been ignored. They have been ignored. They've been patted on the head and sent on their way by the folks at DVS, and this is an egregious thing. So this will provide them a voice. each of you have deputy registrars and dealers in your districts that have suffered at the hands of the Minlar's debacle. So I think this is a great bill. I'm going to add myself onto the original bill since this is a clone. But this is a good piece of legislation, and this is one that I think I was on last year as an author. This is not something that we should slow down, because dealers in my district have been losing money due to the inefficiencies of Minlar's deputy registrars. There are many who are about to close because of the lack of planning, lack of oversight, lack of responsibility being taken by DVS. So I fully support this and urge your green vote.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Any additional member discussion? Seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Elkins?
Mr. Chair, this is likely to be, it's been laid over in transportation. The indications are that the chairs in both the House and the Senate will fold it into their omnibus bills for transportation, and that will get it funded, which I understand was the issue with the governor last year. But this has bipartisan support, and it needs to move forward.
Thank you. With that, Representative Elkins renews his motion that House File 2741, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Mason, we have before us, again, House File 132. I guess we can probably keep testimony on this one fairly limited since we've heard it before. I understand there is now an amendment, which hopefully will make people okay with it. Would you like to move that House File 132 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register, Representative Mason?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And would you like to move the DE2-1 amendment?
Okay. Yes, that would be, first of all, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members. Yes, I'd like to bring back the House File 132 and then add the amendment.
Okay. Any discussion to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Would you like to sort of explain your bill and what's happened since last we heard?
House File 132 is essentially a response to some of the problems the state has had when it has rolled out new software programs. And during our discussion of the bill the other day, there were concerns about some of the wording relating to users of the programs. And I can assure you there have been a lot of messages passed or exchanged over the last few days. We do seem to have a consensus, and the amendment before you is a result. And I do want to take the time to express my appreciation to everyone who's participated in this process. And to quote Representative Bonner, it took a village, but in the end we have a much stronger policy. I ask for your support.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson, did you want to speak, or are you just here for...
I'm just here for questions,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there anyone who would like to speak on House File 132? Okay, seeing none, member discussion, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one, I did have a lot of cooks stirring the pot on this one, but I think that it ended up really well. The bill as it stands now is reduced to its essential, basic essence. And I have to call out Mr. Gehring on this one for doing an outstanding job, because even with more and more input, and this must have gone at least like half a dozen drafts, the funny thing is that with each draft it actually got simpler, which is really hard to do. So kudos to Mr. Gehring on this for an outstanding job, because this was not easy to wrangle. So,
thank you. Any representatives? There was.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Mason, I think it's clear, as I earlier asserted, about whether or not the original House File 132 should have went through the local government subcommittee. I think it's clear that a group approach to this bill and really vetting the language turned out a much better, and as Representative Elkin said, simpler and easier to follow language that all of the stakeholders are comfortable with. Representative Bonner and Representative Elkins really took the charge on working with Representative Mason kind of behind the scenes over the last several days. I got included on the email chain, I assume by accident. Oh, my goodness.
No, it wasn't an accident. I promised that I would do that.
Next time, you know, whatever. Just tell me when you're done. I think six different drafts is an understatement. But a lot of work went into this, and I think the end product is something Representative Mason and to the stakeholders that everyone can be proud of. And so thanks for your really good work on this.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Any additional member discussion? Okay, any closing remarks, Representative Mason?
Again, I ask for your support.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Mason. With that, Representative Mason moves that House File 132, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Member.
What's that? Okay. Representative Olson, your timing is impeccable. Last but certainly not least, we have House File 2636. I will move that House File 2636 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. Please present your bill, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 2636 is a bill relating to the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. The Duluth Seaway Port Authority is an independent public agency created by the Minnesota State Legislature to foster regional commerce, promote trade development, and facilitate industrial development in our state. The Seaway Port is governed by a seven-member board of commissioners, two of which are appointed by the governor, two by the St. Louis County Board of Commissioners, and three by the Duluth City Council. Existing state law allows certain public entities to meet remotely under limited circumstances. However, despite the Seaway Port Authority status as a state-created public entity, it is unclear whether this section applies to the Ports Board. House File 2636 is intended to clarify the Port Authority or the authority of the Duluth Seaway Port Authority to conduct meetings by telephone or other electronic means. This bill would give the Seaway Port Authority identical clarifying language that the legislature approved for the St. Paul Port Authority in a previous session. My testifier today is Shane Zart of Flattery and Hood, representing the Seaway Port Authority, and can speak to the bill.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Shane Zart with Flaherty and Hood, and here today on behalf of the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. As Representative Olson noted, the Seaway Ports Board is made up of members appointed by the county, city, and the state, and its mission is to promote maritime commerce and industrial development throughout the entire state. Despite being created under state statute under the same section as the St. Paul Port Authority, at one point the Duluth Seaway Port Authority got an opinion from their legal counsel. It wasn't clear what their options were under the open meetings law in terms of their options to meet remotely. That kind of was further clouded when, as Representative Olson mentioned, the St. Paul Port Authority had special legislation adopted clarifying their ability to meet remotely in a previous session. So for the Duluth Seaway Port Authority, this would give them the same authority, and it kind of comes forward in light of also a difficult winter and with some of the St. Louis County members getting to and from a board meeting can mean a 100-mile round trip, and it wasn't always easy this year. So they're interested in seeking this clarification sooner rather than later, and this would help them do that. So thank you, and we're happy to stand for questions from the committee.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Zart. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2636? Okay. Seeing none, member discussion. Representative Zerwas, followed by Representative Quam.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be remiss if I didn't point out that House File 2636 was introduced on March 20th. 8 days ago. The Senate companion has also not met deadline and is to this day not moved out of transportation, finance, and policy. And so I think it's another example of us moving bills and hearing bills that clearly haven't met deadline, and apparently there's no intention of the bill to meet deadline. I think that is a challenge and concerning for us. It's been a trend this session. My concerns, I think at this point I'll leave there. I think there is some language concerns with the bill. We're towards the end now and probably don't have time to make the necessary cleanups that need to be made on the bill. But, we lost a very senior and important member of this committee, and I'm making little bands for this side of the table that says WWPD, what would Pawlowski do? And I think Representative Pawlowski wouldn't hear a bill that came in after first deadline in both the House and Senate. And although Representative Pawlowski is no longer with us in this committee,
he is still alive, Representative Zerwas.
I'm taking the loss personally, Mr. Chair. It's hard because he was a vote I could count on.
Representative Zerwas, Representative Pawlowski and I thought it would be better if we saw other committees. It's not him. It's not him. It's me. Continue, Representative Zerwas.
That was awesome. So, obviously, we have concerns about the process and the fact that this is another example of the committee violating the rules and the timeline that you, as the majority, created. And it's another example of creating the rules that the majority doesn't have the interest in following.
Just a quick comment to that. This isn't unusual. We saw two bills the other day. If you looked at the committee reports on the floor, there were a couple bills grabbed by the Rules Committee. I imagine this one will be as well. I kept it last on the agenda just because I didn't want it to bump out any of the things we already had planned. These local bills are very important to members. Representative Olson asked if I would hear it, it seemed like a reasonable thing to do, especially since we still have 45 minutes and we can certainly discuss our regular committee time, and we can certainly discuss it in great detail if that is the committee's wish. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to that end, Representative Olson spoke to me as well, and I said I had to give you a little bit of grief about the deadline, but then I didn't have an issue with it.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I must let you know that I agree with your determination that the issue did not reside with the former member. the chair's specific words were, "It wasn't him; it was me." And I do think Representative Zerwas needs to reconsider. I think the color green, as in a green jacket that is popular, might be good for the armbands. But I do have a question for the author. I'm assuming the author feels it's appropriate and it's good now in this age with technology to be able of a group to utilize remote communication and participation. Whether it's a blizzard, if they have an illness or quarantine, why didn't the author, if it's generally appropriate, just make this a more inclusive to all similar entities would be availed of this? One of the most frustrating things, and you alluded to it in the testimony, was, well, the St. Paul Port Authority or this other entity It's quite evident there's a propensity to say our group deserves to be exempted from a statute or a requirement, but if it's a good reason, why don't you just have it that all groups of this type can avail themselves of this activity and change the open meeting law if it is generally reasonable and acceptable to do that?
Thank you, Representative Quam. I appreciate the question to the substance of the bill. Before I turn it over to Representative Olson or her testifier to answer, I should probably state for the record I was being a little flip with my comment about our dearly departed member of this committee. So for the record, it was just necessitated by the shuffling of committee membership because of the new member. And I'm very excited to have Representative Becker Finn here to this point, and then I'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want folks to know that I take my assignment to this committee seriously, and I am looking forward to working with all of you. Perhaps Representative Wass misses me on the Public Safety Committee, but but I do take this assignment seriously and look forward to getting some good work done here with all of you. So thank you.
Yep, thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. We appreciate having you here. So Representative Olson, to the question about why this should not apply to all similar entities asked by Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, and I think you actually hit it on the head that St. Paul and Duluth are the only two that actually have this exact, that are set up and established in statute this way, and so we've already done this for St. Paul, and by doing this for Duluth, we'd actually have covered both the Duluth and the St. Paul Port Authority that have this broader, there are local port authorities that don't have the same responsibilities that these two port authorities do. So by changing this today, we would actually bring it to parity with both entities that have the same function that are created in the same way.
Representative Kwong?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a little confused because in previous discussion, it probably was in a different committee, on this bill, a lot of the there were references by the author and to DMC because the same portion of state statute where, port authority type entities, gain, their structure and some of their operating constraints, so even though it doesn't have, a type of wine in its title, it still is in that general area for functionality, and I would think that we don't neglect a city of the first class, the third largest city, when we look at this. Plus, I think there are other entities that are similar in structure that we should make this adjustment, shall we say. To the chair, do we have a room reserved if we do run over?
Thank you, Representative Quam. I believe we do, in fact. I think you're thinking about a different bill authored by Representative Schultz related to an economic development zone within Duluth and not a port authority. Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember when we debated the DMC, much of the committee discussions touched on the fact that they were utilizing port authority structure and enactment. And even though, not all roses might be called, well, I guess all roses are called by rose, not all entities that touch that portion of statute are called by port. And so I'm just wondering if this is a great thing, then we should look at making sure that we, roll it out to, entities. And that's the whole thing is it just irks me we do onesies, and, we're all part of Minnesota. And if it's a good idea, then we should allow the option to a broader range of the state. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole impetus of this. And I do regret impeding the utilization of humor by members of this committee, and that intent was not at all conscious.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Quam. I mean, an interesting comparison to me is the bills we see every year related to making county auditor, treasurer positions appointed instead of elected. I mean, we've done maybe 30 or 40 onesie type bills, to use your term. So we're no, obviously this is number two in the Port Authority case, so maybe we have a ways to go before we need a broader solution. I know in that issue, Representative Nelson finally caved and introduced a bill just to make it statewide. So, but that one took 40 examples of it. So we're only at two in the case of Port Authorities. Representative Nelson looks like he wants to weigh in on that. I should probably let him since I brought him up.
It's like 47 out of 87 counties currently have the ability to appoint different offices, and we do have a bill coming forward that might be on the floor soon that to do that, and I look forward to Representative Quam's support for that bill.
Yep. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think there's confusion here in a couple categories. Duluth is a port city, but we are talking about a port authority. So there are also local port authorities. But I will turn it over to the testifier to read the specific statute that talks about the St. Paul Port Authority and the Duluth Port Authority.
Sure. Mr. Zart.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think it might be helpful to clear up when we say that St. Paul and Duluth are the only two that are authorized in this exact way. We're pointing to a specific statute, which is 469.049. Subdivision 1 is the establishment of the St. Paul and Duluth Port Authorities, and the first line is the Port Authority of St. Paul and the Seaway Port Authority of Duluth are established. So when we say that, we say that these two port authorities are the only two that are established in this way under statute in like manner. So when Representative Olson referenced this would get to two of the two that are established, that's what she was referring to. And I think maybe it further clears it up. I think one of the other distinguishing factors is the Duluth Seaway Port Authority, as she referenced in her introduction, has a 7-member board. Two of those members are appointed by the state, two by the county, three by the city. So it's a state-created public entity with a board that the state plays a role in. Their mission statement is broad, and they happen to be located in Duluth and oversee the port commerce that comes in and out of the Lake Superior up there. But their mission is statewide to foster industrial growth and economic development and maritime commerce that benefits the entire state. So there are local port authorities, obviously, they're authorized under a different section of the statute than these two particular ones. So I think that when we refer to those two as similarly situated, maybe that's helpful in clearing up some of what we mean when we say that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I believe a large portion of the DMC is appointed by the governor. In fact, I think the former, there are members of the governor's, organization, staff, et cetera, that have had leadership in that. So it, but I guess I'm used to it when Rochester became a city of the first class, we discovered that there were multiple things that only affected cities of the first class, but amazingly, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth were all exempted from them. And so instead of trying to add an exemption for Rochester, when I brought a bill forward, I got rid of the superfluous statutes. Because if each city is going to get exempted, then why don't we just go ahead and get rid of that requirement or make it even? So who knows with the abundance of water in the northwest part of the state, that might be, large enough to be navigable for a port over there, and they could be the next one added. So let's go ahead and just be consistent. If it's a good idea, then stop saying, it's only good for the club of two or club of three, etc. I mean, that would be more forthright and prevent the repetition. And as reference to Representative and Chair Nelson's bill, I have an amendment that actually would make it acceptable, so I would wholeheartedly support and even sign on to his efforts.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Is there additional member discussion? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to echo Representative Zerwas's commentary on the fact that this was introduced after deadline, and I mean, that's a problem. And I will tell you, I went back and looked at some of the bills that we heard in various committees, and when we were in the majority, and we did not hear bills that were past deadline. But I'm not opposed to this bill. I'm actually in favor, and Representative Cagle will tell you that I carried a bill last year and she carried it this year, so I'm all for making it easier for us to do these things. But I wonder if addressing 13D.015 and including a port authority in statute that would allow this. I know that there was a special exception. Ms. Dyson walked me through that. Maybe it would be easier to just put a port authority in as being allowed to do that, as opposed to having to go this route. I'm supportive of the measure, but I think that rather than, unless to Representative Klom's point, another port somehow miraculously pops up somewhere in the state, I don't know that would happen, but it could. Maybe we just go down the road that way and do that. And I also think that this skipped local government. And I wonder if putting it back in local government, addressing the definition in that part, and then bringing it back might be a better route. So I would be interested in hearing from the author, and then maybe we'll make a motion to send it to local government.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll let my testifier speak to why the bill was drafted this way, and perhaps if you want to, if we could ask nonpartisan research, whichever you'd prefer.
Sure. Well, I can start. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I can start, and maybe nonpartisan staff can fill in any details that I miss here. The bill was drafted as is, I think, in recognition that the St. Paul Port Authority already had the same authority. It was drafted identically to the legislation that passed for them. To your point, I think procedurally, I believe that when that bill was passed, again, it was a previous legislative session, but I think it went from GovOps to the floor and passed as a standalone bill. To the point, though, I think what you're getting at as well is, whether we look at amending 13D.015 to just be inclusive of these types of port authorities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fair discussion. I think, if you ask the folks at the Duluth Seaway Port Authority, they might say, well, we wish we had done it that time instead of doing the St. Paul one, because we would have been included previously. But I think this is a way, hits two of two, maybe accomplishes the same end, but I appreciate the suggestion and would be open to accomplishing this end however the language looks.
Representative Nash.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, to the part of the testimony that we just heard regarding this having gone to GovOps previously, local government was not a splinter of that. It was local government as one committee, but we've had the decision to make a subcommittee, so it seems to me that it should have procedurally gone there, in addition to it having missed deadline. So I think that it's fair to the members of the Committee of Local Government that we send this back there. I would like to see it just redefined in 13D.015. I think that's a little bit cleaner approach. Mr. Chair, I would actually make a motion to send this, to refer this back to local government.
Thank you, Representative Nash.
And if we could roll call that, sir.
Sure. Roll call has been requested. I just want to make an initial point. I mean, first of all, I think we do great work on the local government subcommittee. I think Chair Mason asks great questions. We did that yesterday. I think it is appropriate to send some bills there. We sent some there earlier this week. We had a hearing yesterday. All the DFL members were there. Unfortunately, none of the GOP members showed up. I don't think this one needs to go back. It's a port authority. It doesn't deal with cities and counties. That's kind of the traditional definition of a local government. I think we have a lot of expertise on both sides of the aisle in the local government committee. It's too bad the GOP members, chose not to show up yesterday to talk about it. But we did ask questions. Representative Mason asked some great questions on both bills. The DFL members were there, were ready to go to work. But I'm not inclined to support this motion. I'll be voting no. I just don't. It's a port authority. We are approaching the second deadline. To me, this seems like an effort to delay. Frankly, some of the earlier motions, just particularly when the GOP members won't show up, I just have an issue with that. Representative Elkins, you were next on the list.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Quam is aggressively raising
Mr.
his
Chair,
peg.
I hadn't finished necessarily, but and we had asked for a roll call, so
yeah,
I think procedurally we need to take that up. But,
that's fine.
I can't decide whether members show up or not, but I certainly think that the voice of the Republican members on the local government are valuable, as you yourself just admitted. So I think that referring this back to local government, because it is certainly a local issue, as we heard from the testimony, I think that that's an important thing. And, I'm not sure what are we – can we have more discussion on this, or do we need to go to the vote?
Well, Representative Quam is on the list. So are you finished, Representative Nash?
Well, I guess I am now.
Okay. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just need some clarification because, at times there's humor in the committee. And the chair referenced the urgency of not moving this to the other committee because second deadline was there. But if we were concerned about deadlines, we would not – be taking a bill that was introduced after deadline. So therefore, for clarification, was that meant as humor, utilizing the second deadline for urgency?
Because that's a fair point, Representative Quam. If it was humor, it certainly wasn't particularly funny.
for the record,
maybe to like serious legislative geeks it might be, but that's a fair point. I just don't see a reason to delay it. It'll likely get grabbed by the Rules Committee. As I said, we had a couple other bills where that happened a couple days ago, so I anticipate that's probably the course will happen here.
Mr. Chair, the Rules Committee appears to be doing a lot of grabbing. Do they need some additional or repeat remedial training?
Was that humor, Representative Quam?
Very dry.
Okay. Great. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to clarify, obviously, this is I'm 20 minutes into my time on this committee, but whether the concern about rules and procedure, I'm just wondering if the same rules apply in this committee as far as being recognized by the chair when it's your turn to speak.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
So maybe I give more latitude than some other chairs, Representative Becker-Finn.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you. Seeing no member discussion, there is a motion to re-refer and a roll call has been requested, so the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Sauk. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Becker-Finn.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yep.
Representative Quam.
Yep.
Ruski Azik.
Okay. Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative West.
There being 6 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail. Additional discussion to the bill. Okay, seeing none, Representative Olson, would you like to make any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill. And I think given the nature of, you know, our job as legislators to advocate strongly and fiercely for our communities and their best interests, and I bring this forward in understanding and appreciating the robust discussion that also involves some process points as this. But we came, I mean, we just passed a couple of bills off the House floor. We'll be seeing another one come back around urgency due to what happened with the weather. And I mean, my county is large. St. Louis County is big. We have people driving, talked about with Rob Eklund, how long it takes him to drive across the county. So we saw urgency this winter with this coming to a head. And I want to be a strong advocate for my community. And I'm glad I could bring this bill forward. And I really appreciate the discussion today and for all the members' time and attention on this matter. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Olson renews her motion that House File 2636 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register.
Mr. Chair, she's not on the committee, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I renew my motion. It's the last one. It's been a long session already. I renew my motion that House File 2636 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Before we adjourn, so this is our last regular committee meeting, and I'll make sure to call on you, Representative Zerwas. Before the second deadline, we're not meeting tomorrow. We may have one or two hearings yet before the third deadline, possibly to hear a bill as an informational. I'm not sure what might occur yet at this point, but I will endeavor to... make it at our regular standing committee time, so Tuesdays or Thursdays at 9:45 a.m., so it shouldn't be any major surprise what time it's at. You know, so since this is the last regular meeting before second deadline, I do just want to say, you know, thank you to all the committee members, those who have been here for the whole session, those who have been here for an hour. I really appreciate all of your input. I want to thank our staff, my great committee administrator, Amanda Rudolph, Coco Millard, the committee legislative assistant, my vice chair, Representative Sauk. Our pages, Emily and Steve, haven't really gotten a whole lot of attention. I appreciate your attention to all of our ridiculous demands and photocopying requests and handing things out to members. So you've really done a great job this session. I really appreciate it. You know, I think the Government Operations Committee has a reputation as being a somewhat boring committee. I think we've disproven that hypothesis this session in spades. So, and I owe that all to the creativity of the committee members and our staff. So thank you all for being here. Representative Zerwas, you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a feeling the fun isn't over. Looking ahead, as we look ahead, what's the timeline notice as far as I know? You said that we'll meet, if we meet, we would meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays during our normal meeting times. As we get closer to the end of session, as things get a little removed from policy committee times, it's not uncommon for that time on members' calendars to fill in either with stuff in district or other constituent responsibilities. I'm wondering what kind of timeline we would expect for notice on meetings. We have 2 to 3 days notice on meetings that were to be scheduled in the future on a Tuesday or Thursday in their normal meeting times.
Yeah, I will. Thanks, Representative Zerwas. I will certainly endeavor to do the 3 days that we've attempted to. I can't promise it will always happen, but that will definitely be my goal because I want to be respectful of all members on both sides.
Yep.
Yeah, Representative Zerwas.
One last question, Mr. Chair. Are you prepared today to make the commitment that this committee won't meet after third deadline?
I'm not prepared to make that. I don't expect we will. I don't know of anything. There might be campaign finance board amendments. I'll make sure to, what's that? Yeah, and pensions as well, I think, might have to come here. Yes, so no, I guess, would be the answer. I'm not prepared to make that commitment, but I will certainly endeavor to keep the number of meetings limited and give it as much advance notice as possible. Representative Zerwas?
So with not making that commitment, is it your expectation at this point prior to second deadline Is your thought that the pensions bill won't make third deadline? Is that what you're prepared to say here today?
I'm not prepared to say anything, Representative Zerwas. I'm just not prepared to make a commitment.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. We've really enjoyed this committee.
Thank you. I have as well. And I forgot probably the most important, well, no, everyone's, we're all important here, but Matt Gehring, Deborah Dyson from House Research, I've probably emailed them more than anybody else. So I apologize for not mentioning in my initial round of thank yous, but thank you both very much. So without seeing any additional comments from members, we are adjourned.